You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Potluck Food Talks. I'm here with Filippi Nigiri-san. No? And we're going to talk about fats, the controversial world of fats.
Yeah, it is kind of controversial, isn't it? I mean, yeah, lots of people think fats are really bad, no?
Yeah. Do you think... Can you imagine of a cuisine without fats? Is that even possible?
No, I don't think so. It's not possible. No, honestly not. I mean, no fats at all? No.
Well, I first of all, in the evolution of humans, fats played a key role in the development of the brain. So if you're thinking you should avoid all fats all the time, well, that's just not good for your body, basically.
That's fucking stupid. And you're an idiot if you think that. Yeah, no, I mean, like, obviously, fats, there has to be a healthy and conscious approach to fats. But many fats are really, really crucial and are really good for you, you know? I mean, cold-pressed extra virgin olive oil is proven to decrease depression. Have you heard about that?
No.
Apparently, a tablespoon of... it has to be cold-pressed extra virgin high-quality olive oil. Right, olive oil, there's such a huge range of quality, and there's some olive oils that you might as well be consuming petroleum, right? Olive oil, when it's good, it's really fucking good. And it's really good for you also.
And as you said, when it's bad, it's not good at all. I see people trying to be like, you know, greedy, and they buy the cheapest olive oil in the supermarket here in Spain, which is not even extra virgin. No. And actually, sunflower oil is better than that.
yeah, totally. I heard the other day, I don't know who from, but that they keep finding a large amount of traces of gasoline in olive oil, because a lot of the pumps that they use for cheap olive oil are gasoline-fueled. So they have an engine that they fuel with gasoline that make run the press. And the fumes of that, they get absorbed by the olive oil, because obviously oil absorbs things very, very easily. And so you're basically consuming gasoline fumes. And that's,
Which obviously also happens if you consume cocaine. It's one of the main ingredients of cocaine. Now you know that, children. You just mentioned something very crucial, is that oils and fats are flavor and aroma carriers, conductors, and that's what makes them so interesting in cooking. For marinades, but also just spread spices or herbs in some elaboration. It's also a heat conductor, and that's why you use it for both functionalities. When you're basting, you're basically putting your buttery, aromatized flavors all over your steak or whatever you're basting. I think that's why I can't imagine a cuisine without fats, because it has that function, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, if I had to stretch my imagination a lot, and I'd imagine a cuisine that is entirely broth and, like, steam-based and stuff like that, you know? There's still intrinsic, like, essential oils to so many ingredients. I would say I can't imagine a cuisine without fats. And yeah, you know, like butter, obviously, like, okay, we can't talk about fats without talking about butter. Butter in Western cooking is king. All right. I mean, you know, apart from olive oil, butter and olive oil, butter countries and olive oil countries. But just as olive oil, like, you know, people give butter a really bad rep, but butter, again, there's such a huge range of quality. From, you know, poorly made butter to very, very nutrient-rich butter. And butter is a very good food supplement for you, with very healthy fats and amino acids, which are crucial to for you to function. And
what dishes are, like, heavily butter-based? Well, for example, like a good I can think of a lemon pie, you know, like a lemon cream.
Oh, yeah.
Which is basically lemon-infused butter. That's what it is.
You know, like, you would...
with some other stuff, with a little bit of, egg and whatever, but it's...
You would be surprised how little lemon there is in your lemon pie. I have an amazing recipe for lemon pie. It's like, I found it last year. I didn't find it. Katie gave it to me. It's a recipe from Gordon Ramsay that I changed up a little bit, and it's become my absolutely favorite. I can't imagine that there's a better recipe for lemon, like a lemon custard. And it's so ingenious and it's so easy and so cool. But it's like, I think there's like a quarter of citrus juice in it. The rest is egg and butter and sugar. And still it tastes really, really citrusy, really lemony, really bright.
Pretty much, yeah. I used to make one from Pierre Hermé. And yeah, the thing had so much butter that you had to put it like in batches, you know, while the blitz is running. Yeah. But I mean, there are so many things where basically you're eating butter with some other stuff, like a croissant, like a brioche. That shit has so much butter. And that's what it keeps this dairy, fatty flavors.
Absolutely, yeah. And like often also this like this light like lactic acidity. I love it when things have this like butter, the sourness from like well-made dairy. I think to me that's like super, super tasty. I mean, like, you know, mashed potatoes. I mean, the Robuchon mashed potatoes.
Ah,
like,
also 60% butter or 70%.
Basically, yeah. And I started making my mashed potatoes very differently. I used to like melt butter in milk and add it to the potatoes and stuff. Nowadays, I boil good quality potatoes. I peel them, I rice them. And while they're hot, I keep adding butter and melting it, like folding it into the potatoes. Until I feel like the whole thing's going to split completely.
Yeah.
And then I start adding some hot milk just to bring it back together and keep the emulsification going. And it's the best mashed potato like ever. It's the texture is perfect. The flavor is perfect.
That's pretty much the Robuchon one. Like it's pretty much, as you said, like you add the butter, never melted, more like cold cold and cubes. So you can let it melt while it's mixing,
and it's super good. And it's like sometimes I mean, as a chef, you taste something and you can tell it needs more fat, right? Like a sauce, and sometimes you like a dressing or something, you'll taste it and you'll be like, now we need to emulsify some fat into this to round it out, to give it this silkiness, but also like not just in the texture visually, but like on the mouth feel. There's really smart ways of using fat also, especially animal fats. I think animal fats are also really underrated.
I was going into that because, I mean, olive oil and butter are pretty common sense, you know, and we could make a whole episode about butter. We could talk about roasted butter or clarified butter and these kind of things. But yeah, using animal fats, like chuleta fat, one of my favorite ingredients in the world.
100%.
Dog fat, same. Yeah. And chicken fat, also super cool.
Very, very widely used in Jewish cooking, right? As schmaltz.
Schmaltz, correct. Yeah.
Super nice. I don't know why it isn't like more widely used, because it's like, it's absolutely delicious. Also, beef tallow, which is beef fat, so good. I mean, from like really obvious things like roasting potatoes or something, or vegetables. But, you know, like what I used to do with all the Wagyu fat, I used to trim the fat cap off, dice it down, and then render it slowly so all the fat melts. But then all the solids that remain, keep cooking them until they crisp up and brown. And then you strain that fat off and you have this like roasted meat fat. And using that to just like brush your fat instead of like using oil or brush your meat instead of like using oil or whatever while you're grilling it or like glazing it afterwards, it super boosts your meat flavor. It's so good. And it's not an unhealthy fat. It's not a refined sort of like processed, completely natural.
I've also had fries, French fries, potatoes in goose fat or in cow fat. Also super, super, super nice.
It's so good. Yeah. Once I went to a restaurant in London called Lyle's, very well-known restaurant. It's really, really good. And they had a dessert on with a really beautiful, like buttery caramel sauce. And it was really complex and nice. And one of the waiters came to us and he was sort of like, yeah, how do you like the dessert? And I was like, yeah, super nice. And he was like, can you tell what the secret ingredient is? And we couldn't. And he was like, the caramel is made with duck fat. So they emulsified, instead of using butter, how you would for traditional like butter caramel, they used roasted duck fat. And it gave this caramel this like really deep, complex taste. And it wasn't like immediately apparent. It didn't taste like duck, right? But it was really, really smart. And I really love using fats like this in a creative way.
Also, if you see like very old pastry recipes, like cookies, and then especially here in Spain, you will find a lot of pork fat going on in those cookies as a secret ingredient.
Pork fat, man. Pork fat is amazing. You know, like after being to Mexico, I have a new found appreciation for pork fat, as in like, you know,
the tamales, like, yeah.
Yeah. And even tortillas de harina, flour yeah. tortillas. It seems like such a simple thing, right? A flour, wheat flour flatbread. I've tried to make them a few times at home and I'm a chef, I can make a flatbread, right? It's just not quite the same as, you know, as the grandmas in Mexico were making it. And then I started like asking a couple of friends of mine and they were sending me recipes and they all use pork fat for their tortillas. Huh. There's a little bit of manteca in there. And I feel like it gives it this like little je ne sais quoi. It's amazing. Yeah.
You know what is also crazy? Have you heard, you probably have, about ketogenic diet?
Yeah.
That's insane because it's so counterintuitive. I tried to do it once, but if you don't do it 100%, it can be very dangerous and very bad. So you have to pull it off till the end. And it's basically a high fat diet. So you add, I don't know, like butter to your coffee and your breakfast is yogurt with extra olive oil. And then you have like a bowl of butter for lunch. So you really have to rethink about what food is and how it works. And what happens in your body is that once you get cetosis or ketosis in English, it's like a change of metabolism that your body starts to use instead of carbs, fats as energy. So that there's yeah. a change in the energy generation system of your... But of course, if you add a little bit of carb to the formula, it gets reversed. Mm-hmm. And this is not only for weight loss, but it's also like a very recommended diet for people with cancer. Because it's, this kind of diet, it helps very much to kill the cancer cells. They can't survive in such a fatty body, apparently. As I said, I tried to do it, and it's very counterintuitive, everything, because, you know, lots of nuts, lots of oils. While I was trying it, you can get satiated pretty easy with a high-fat diet, you know. What other fats? Coconut fat? You like coconut fat?
Yeah, yes and no, like not so much. Like I think it's cool when you have like real coconut cream and you like skim the fat off like in Thai cooking and you use that. It's like a very different fat to use, like not the like refined super like the coconut fat that you buy in the supermarket, but that kind of thing, like to cook a curry paste before you add the coconut milk. That is very cool, I think. And that's very, very interesting. But I also think that's very underappreciated is high quality, like alternates, like nut oils. Like for example, here in Germany, we can buy really high quality walnut oil, like cold pressed walnut oil. It's insane, absolutely insane. We were making an ice cream with it here. So like a white walnut ice cream that has no actual walnuts in it, just the like cold pressed walnut oil as an ice cream.
Super cool. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, and it's like a completely different flavor because it's almost like green walnuts, you know? So it's like really, it's just very different. But also things like plum seed oil.
Ah, that's incredible.
Amazing, right? I mean, remember how we were using it in Margaux?
You know,
it's for like certain things, absolutely incredible.
But for that matter, any stone fruit oil, you know, it could be plums, it could be cherries, all
apricots. Yeah, totally. Yeah, cherry pit oil, for example, also super delicious. We used to make a cherry pit vinaigrette here at the restaurant where we would use like cherry vinegar and cherry pit oil a little bit and olive oil and stuff. Super, super nice. It's such a unique flavor that you can find in sort of like for me, it's like umeboshi kind of tastes like that. It has this like very particular, what's it? It's like almost arsenic, you know, this like almond flavor.
Do you like avocado oil?
I have not used avocado oil that much, I think, honestly.
Okay.
You?
Yeah, it's not among my favorites. Like, I feel avocado is fatty in itself. So I think avocado is like a very good source of fattiness.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And it also has like these aromas, and you usually add some acidity to it, and you have like your fatty thing. And when it comes to avocado oil, I'm like, there's like a lot of stuff missing there. So it's because it's made again with the seeds.
Mm. Yeah. What about egg yolks?
Egg yolks.
Would you count egg yolks as a fat?
What
percentage of egg yolks is fat?
I don't know. 35%.
35%.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, they enter kind of like into the fatty category.
Well, what about emulsions? All kinds of mayos, aliolis, all those sauces, it's like 80% fat, basically. Basically, if you're eating mayonnaise, it's like drinking oil.
Basically, and it's really scary because like, I'm a person that if I have a plate of chips, like a plate of French fries, I could just like finish a fucking pint of mayonnaise. Or aioli, you know? Jesus Christ. But yeah, I mean, emulsions, knowing and understanding emulsions and how they work and what you can do with them, I think it's one of the most important skills for a chef. It's such a huge, huge thing. I mean, like even a good dressing versus a bad dressing. I have very early on figured out how to make nice salad dressings by making... And I was making my salad dressings almost like I was making mayonnaise. I was emulsifying them until they were very, very thick. I was seasoning them like very intensely, like nice point of acidity, nice point of salt, and enough sweetness to balance out the acidity so it's harmonious. It would like coat the salad in like a really nice way and be just like a super pungent flavor thing. And like just if you understand that and you can take so many preparations further. In Mugaritz, for example, we were making a fat emulsion made out of chuleta fat, which you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I had that with artichokes. Super nice.
So nice.
Like just grilled artichokes with a chuleta mayo. There's nothing better in life.
Yeah, basically. And it's really cool because you take, like, usually it'd be sort of like the meat in the centerpiece and then have like a side of artichokes. And here, you have the vegetable as the main actor and still have the like roasty fattiness from the chuleta to accentuate it, which is really, really nice.
For me, that's the best way to cook vegetables, to be honest, to have vegetables with some layer of animal fat or animal protein, you know, pretty much like the way you find it in woks in Asia. But yeah, or cooking vegetables in chicken fat or adding, you know, pieces of Iberico ham to the whatever you're doing. It's just the best way to eat them. Sorry, vegans.
Yeah, for sure. You know what I think is a really underrated and misused, but like, yeah, just very underrated and there's not enough knowledge about it is cream. And things like creme fraiche and stuff like that. I think people don't really know what good cream is anymore. Like people buy the fucking Tetra Paks from the supermarket and they, you know, they pour it into their sauces. It's like the super standardized thing. I was reminded of this last year when I was kind of trying out new suppliers and I was looking around, and there was this one place that specializes in organic produce, and they had these like buckets of high quality cream from a local dairy here. And I was like, okay, cool. It's like a 5 kilo bucket. And it's like, well, it's a little bit less practical, but I wanted to give it a try. And it came and it was like just how cream should be. Really thick, solid layer on the top that you kind of have to mix it with the liquid. It's like split because there's no emulsifiers, right? It's just a natural product. And immediately I noticed such a huge difference. Like, and then you think to like old school cooking where you have like, you know, poulet à la crème, right? Just like chicken in a cream sauce with like mushrooms or whatever. You add a spoonful of this cream and you put it in, the flavor and the textures immediately gets really thick and creamy, while with like the other cream, you have to reduce it down and whatnot. Completely different. And it really made me think that this thing that we're using, like this cream is that we buy in the supermarket, it's nothing to do with the real product the way that it used to be. The same with milk, right? Like, think of the Mamiya, you know, that if you use with a like a nice caserío milk, right? Where you can taste the grass that the cow has been eating. And then you compare it to this like milk. It's like milk is fucking everywhere. It's in every fucking coffee shop. It's not, it's just a white liquid, really. It's there's nothing really to it. And I think it's a really important topic. It's the same with crème fraîche, right? Crème fraîche is a cultured cream. If you've ever tried a freshly well-cultured crème fraîche, it's incredible, the flavor. And if people would put more effort into sourcing or making things like that, I think it would impact cooking for people in a massive way, because it's immediately, it's like a jump that's like five times better.
What about clarified butter? You know, I was recently... we haven't talked about this. I had a recent trip to New York and Boston. And yeah, I went to this place in the docks in Boston. I think it's Sail Loft is the name. It's like a very traditional place. And I was recommended to have the clam chowder there, which you get served like in a ceramic jar. And it's, you know, overflowing, super thick. Quite delicious. Apparently, there are two schools of chowder. One is like more creamy. The other one is more like a brothy liquid texture. They're both very different. So I wouldn't say I like one better than the other. And then I had like a lobster roll, like the classic lobster rolls you get in Boston is one of the iconic things you get there. So it was this roll and a brioche bread. And you would get like a little cup of clarified butter just to pour it on top of your lobster.
That's very nice.
Life is just better with a little bit of liquid butter to put on top of your shellfish.
Ain't that the truth, brother? Yeah, super nice. Super, super nice. Are you, when you make a hollandaise, do you clarify your butter or...?
I haven't done a hollandaise in quite a while. I remember I used to do it until someone told me you don't need to clarify it, and then I stopped doing it. Yeah, that was kind of my process.
Yeah, I actually do the same. I melt it, of course. I let it come up one time, but I don't clarify it. I don't strain it. I think that the dairy solids in butter are super super delicious, right? And I always emulsify them into my hollandaise also, because I don't see the point of wasting them, because that's like a lot of the butter flavor is coming from there. And at the end of the day, you know, if you're making brown butter, beurre noisette, that's really what gives you the flavor. It's that you're cooking these solids until they separate and start to brown. Mm-hmm. That is really the only thing that is giving you the brown butter flavor.
Yeah, I remember I was working in this place where we tried to make but we never successfully made it, like a brown butter hollandaise. Have you ever done that?
Yeah.
Okay, in our case, it would always split, and we started doing it differently. We would use even like a chiffon for the hollandaise. Mm. And yeah, it never worked out. So you've done it successfully.
Yeah, for sure. Since like 2 years ago, I started using a lot more brown butter. I have kind of like rediscovered brown butter for myself, and I always have like squeezy bottles of ready-made brown butter in the kitchen to glaze me, to finish dishes, to just add a glug, you know.
Life is just better with brown butter.
Yeah, it's like, it's and people don't really know what it is often, you know, like you just add a couple of glugs on top of like your dish with different components, with a puree here, meat there, this, that, blah. And people are sort of like, oh my God, it's so delicious.
You know, I work at the, as you know, at the opening of Lab Digital Gastronomy Lab here in San Sebastian. And I think the only thing that remains from my times when I was head chef there is the butter. And a lot of people tell that, like, yeah, it's incredible. And that's just like, it's not fancy butter. It's just not normal butter, which was browned, then cooled down, and then packaged yet.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then you can take a quenelle out of it and serve it, and you have like this mounted brown butter, and it's just fucking delicious. Everybody loves it. You know, Fernando Bárcenas, you know, like we were doing like a test, you know, like a soft opening dinner with him. And this guy who was head chef of Arsac during the 80s and 90s, you know, like a real OG, he was like, oh, this is old school. And I was so proud, you know, like this man, this is all, nobody does this anymore. Like,
that's really cool. Yeah. That's really cool. It's funny. Here at Chateau, we do a butter very, very similar, actually. Like I'm a really big fan of that. I mean, I used to do a toasted yeast butter, which is my go-to butter, really. But
toasted yeast butter. Okay, I wanted to know more about that.
Yeah, okay, I'll tell you in a second. And here we do a brown butter, like a whipped brown butter. So we take like one part brown butter, and it's important that you take all the solids that brown and you mix it in, right? So that they, because usually they settle on the bottom, right?
But that's what happens when you put it in a packaged thing. Everything, so you end up having this light brown butter with a lot of dark brown dots. Okay, and that's the effect you want.
That's super, super nice. Yeah, and here we just like temper butter. We whip it with salt in a KitchenAid, and we add the brown butter to it, and we just whip it until it's really creamy. But yeah, the toasted yeast butter. So basically, you take fresh yeast, right, like baker's yeast, and you take the same amount of weight in butter. You crumble the yeast into the butter, and you start cooking it medium heat. So the butter's melting, you crumble the yeast into it. With a whisk, you keep whisking. So, and you basically approach it as if you were making brown butter. So what happens is that the moisture that's inside of the yeast is going to cook out, right? It's going to steam out of this butter. And then it goes through different phases where basically the particles of the yeast separate more and more and more until they're really fine, like sand or like caseína, at some point start to brown, just like brown butter. The end result is something that is toasty and nutty like brown butter, but also has really intense flavors of like roasted rye bread. It's like full on umami. And I've used this butter for many different things. I used to use it for glazing meat when grilling. So like you grill something, you take it off, you glaze it with this butter, you grill it again, it forms this like crust. It's very hard to describe. It's just like full on.
I can really imagine it because I've done roasted yeast before, which is like a great ingredient for vegan pastas, for example. It's kind of like
Like a Parmesan. Use it
like a Parmesan, yeah, exactly. So you basically take fresh yeast and you roasted in the oven. I don't remember the temperature or the timing, but you end up having this crumble, very umami rich, yet at the same time, yeah, very yeasty vegetable. And I can see the two things pairing really well.
Yeah.
Yeast is an ingredient that I saw it for the first time in Mugaritz. They would do a yeast broth to serve it with foie gras, which was incredible.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
super nice.
That's it for this week's episode of Potluck Food Talks. If you like what we're doing, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok as Potluck Food Talks. The show airs every Monday.